Always one of the most popular visits of the week. It's with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And as always, this is brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty, full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. That means state, federal, municipal courts. They have their criminal defense practice. They also assist people facing orders of protection, probation violations, tickets. From minor offenses to major offenses, they can help you. They're available 24/7. And the number to call for a couple of guys based right here in St. Louis, 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400. They came to me, I would say, a year and a half ago. They're guys that we are connected through high school. I know it was not in their class, but we all went to the same high school, and they saw how involved I am with St. Louis, and they said, we want to be just like that. We want to be involved in St. Louis and help out St. Louis people. And believe me, it has worked for them, and it can work for you. STLCriminalDefense.com, STLCriminalDefense.com. And before I get to Ben, if you have a mailbag question for myself, Ben, Martin Kilcoin, Darren Pang, Bernie Federko, Dan@ScoopsWithDannyMac.com is my email. Dan@ScoopsWithDannyMac.com is my email. Ben Fred, always good to visit with you. Good morning to you. How are you?
Doing well, man. Good morning, and fun time of the year. There's plenty to talk about. We got baseball being put to bed. It seems like that off season is shorter and shorter, especially when the Cardinals play as deep as they did, and college football is reaching its high point. Not necessarily at Missouri, but college basketball is up and running too. I love this time of the year, preferably when the baseball postseason is still going on. But you got everything, all the balls in the air at once, including hockey, starting to get a little more important. It's a fun time of the year.
We're going to get into all that in just a moment, but let's go back to a couple of days ago. At Busch Stadium, the Cardinals had their season-in-review press conference with Michael Gerst, John Mozeliak receiving extensions. Mike Schilt also receiving an extension. Cardinals chairman Bill DeWitt Jr. was there. Your impressions of that press conference, what did you take away?
Not surprised by the contract news of the day with everybody being extended. That shouldn't be surprising to those who have been paying attention and those who know what the Cardinals value and what this year represent in terms of those values. So nothing to really see there. A little bit surprised, Dan, by the kind of the pretty blunt opinion of the Cardinals front office that they don't necessarily seem to think that there is a move out there to put their finger on right now that they feel like they need to go out there and find for 2020. They obviously knew the offense was going to be the big topic. And they've played this kind of end of season press conference in different ways in the past. Usually there are a couple needs, one or two things they can point to and say, we think we need to go do this. And that has changed over the years. Sometimes it's been a leadoff hitter. Sometimes it's been a middle of the order bat. Sometimes it's been, center fielder. You know, the description kind of changes, but it really sounds like, based off of the comments from the front office, that they feel like this team's going to look a lot like it did in 2019 and 2020, and really they're banking on some younger players coming up and having some more chances to prove what they can do. Now, some of that's limited by contract situations. The Cardinals have some unpleasant contracts hanging over their heads right now with Matt Carpenter and Dexter Fowler and Brett Cecil and Mike Leake, even paying him to not pitch for the Cardinals. So they're not exactly the most financially flexible group right now. It doesn't sound like they're planning on a massive hike in payroll compared to their revenue. So they're looking at more or less the same team. I do think there will be a move or two. I think there will always be something. I don't think John Mozeliak will sit through an offseason and do nothing. But it doesn't sound like that big splash is coming. And I think that probably, I don't know that it shocked anyone, but it probably caught some folks off guard a little bit. I did think they would maybe have more of a player-based or targeted plan to try to kind of do something about this offense. But it sounds like they're really going to buckle down on trying to get more out of these hitters. And what I took away from it after a day to digest it is, to me, it was fascinating because the front office spent some of that time talking about Jeff Albert, and what 2020 sounds like to me, Dan, is really a doubling down on and kind of raising the stakes on this Jeff Albert hire. because if the Cardinals don't go out and get any better hitters, and if they do rely on Matt Carpenter bouncing back and these young guys emerging and hitting well, then they're putting that much more faith in Jeff Albert that he's going to be the guy to lead them to this breakthrough and do it a year after the offense was certainly the worst part of a pretty good team.
When I hear the word outlier, I heard it a bunch, and it pertains to Matt Carpenter, and it does seem like they almost are looking at Carpenter as if it was Dexter Fowler from a year ago. He's going to come back, whether fans like that or not. He's kind of been a lightning rod going into this offseason. And you know, he had an MVP-type year 2 years ago. Last year, found himself on the bench a good portion of the time in September and down the stretch. I have a visit, a one-on-one with John Mozeliak up on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com that you can go to right now, which was right after the press conference in his office, and we got into Matt Carpenter. They're going to put their eggs in that basket, you know, barring anything that would be, you know, surprising, I think, to some. Are you okay with kind of saying, all right, it's an outlier year, and Carpenter's going to get it back together, and we're going to go forward with him? How do you feel about that?
Well, I think that's what they should hope for, and they've got, you know, a lot of money banking on the hoping that reasons to hope that comes true. I mean, they gave him that extension at the beginning of the season, an extension that at the time was said as, look, this is a way to keep him in a Cardinals uniform for the rest of his career. And looking back, it was just an unnecessary extension. They didn't need to do that at the time. There was not any reason to believe that Matt Carpenter was dying to leave the Cardinals. They could have ironed that out at the end of this season. Matt Carpenter probably should have been entering free agency right now after a down year, and he very much probably would have been open to taking a renegotiated deal to stay with the Cardinals that would have been much more cost-friendly for the Cardinals. Now, did they know he was going to fall off the face of the earth at the plate? No. But should they have maybe had a little bit of an inkling that he wasn't going to be the kind of hitter that he was for a few months the previous season? Perhaps. I mean, even in that September of 2018, he hit another slump. And if you look back from the point of that, from the start of that to through the end of this season, it's hard to say this, Dan, but he's been one of the least effective hitters in the game. His average is, I think, second worst among players that have had 500 plus at bat during that span. He has struck out twice as many times as he's walked, and he's always been a good on-base guy. I don't think that Matt Carpenter could possibly be as bad next season as he was this season, but I don't know what's realistic to expect from him. You know, Dexter Fowler wasn't as bad this season as he was last season, but he was still a below-average hitter this season and below his career averages. So, you know, I think it's with the contract, you don't really have a choice but to bring him back. He's got a no trade clause, as does Fowler. So I understand that. I still think it would be possible for the Cardinals to come up with, I mean, call it a backup plan, the potential to have a good problem, but go out and get a third baseman who can at least compete to give you starting quality play at third base. And I'm not talking about Anthony Rendon. Anyone who has followed the Cardinals know that's not happening. Same with Garrett Cole. But, you know, there's an interesting group of third basemen out there. Mike Moustakas, who we've talked about before. You know, you look at Josh Donaldson if he doesn't sign an extension in Atlanta. Maybe Justin Turner if the Dodgers are so into Rendon as some would have you believe. They're not cheap. No performing player is cheap. But there are going to be some intriguing third basemen out there that are not Rendon. And then people say, well, what if Carpenter does bounce back? And if he does bounce back, then maybe he's better than Mike Moustakas. And to that, I'd say, great. You know, don't give the guy a no trade clause. And then, you know, then you're talking about a good problem to have. The potential problem with bringing back Matt Carpenter, putting him at third base and say, hey, have a bounce back year, is if he doesn't, then you have Tommy Edman, who had a great rookie debut, playing third base every day in a demanding position in a spot that he's not played a full major league season in. And you're completely removing him from the equation of being the bounce around Ben Zobrist type. And you're eliminating the backup for Paul DeJong, who really was worn ragged by the time the year was over, because you don't really have a backup, you know, that can spare him except for Edman, even though they didn't find a way to get him any reps there at shortstop this year. But he can play that position some in the majors and should. And you're kind of taking away his diversity by planting him at third base. And I would like to see the Cardinals give themselves a little more certainty at third. I don't think they have to give up on Carpenter. I don't think they have to, you know, cut him or eat the money. They're not going to do that. But I do think there would be a way there to get a little bit more of a sure thing, because it's a pretty thin situation right now.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients. And this is why you can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again. And really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. stlcriminaldefense.com. Check it out. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
When I look at the rotation, I'm anticipating Wainwright back, Waka not, and Martinez. It was mentioned they're going to give him every chance to start again. They used 20 different relievers last year out of their bullpen. At some point, Jordan Hicks returns, but I don't think you can sit there and say, well, let's count on him to be a closer the minute he comes back. You can't do that. So are you comfortable with Martinez going back in the rotation and putting together a 200-inning season and being there every fifth day? Are you comfortable with that?
I'll believe it when I see it. I hope it happens for him, because that makes the Cardinals, that gives them their best rotation, and that's where Carlos wants to be. And I'd like to see Carlos, just for his sake, get back there. I mean, Carlos is a complicated guy in a lot of ways, but, you know, I do think he is a good guy who wants to be that guy. He wants to be that guy. Lord knows he has the talent. Now, does he have the dedication and the determination to put himself in the best place physically and mentally entering a spring training to hold down that spot? He has in the past. He hasn't had it the past two springs. We'll see if he gets another shot. I think the Cardinals are in kind of a no-lose situation here. They give Carlos the opportunity. They tell him, hey, here's the ball, go run with it. And if he can't do it, then he's your closer. It's pretty simple to me. And then I don't worry, you know, some might disagree here, but if Carlos is in your rotation, that's the best. And you figure out closer as you go. I don't think we're going to see the Cardinals go after a relief pitcher in free agency, especially not an older one. They've just been burned so many times there with everybody they've signed. I think they are better off just kind of coming up with a guy or taking a chance on a guy and seeing who sticks. Gallegos could do it. I still think John Brebbia could do it to some degree. You're going to have Hicks back at some point. Carlos could end up there. Junior Fernandez, you've got guys, you know, who can throw hard.
Ryan Helsley.
In that spot, who could figure it out. Yeah, I mean, go on down the list. So I'm not worried about them coming up with a closer if they need to. I'm also not worried about it being a different guy every night, especially early on in the season. If they need to, somebody will emerge for that role and be able to hold it down until they have somebody else come along. But I don't put relief pitching on my shopping list for the Cardinals this offseason. It's going to be a short shopping list, it sounds like, and I think they're good enough at coming up with guys on their own. They've always been able to create somebody, and it seems like the guys they've gone out and spent money on recently in that role, and it's not just the Cardinals. We've seen this across baseball. It's any guy who seems to have proven himself as a reliever is so much closer to the end of his shelf life that you're better off taking a chance on a guy who's not as proven.
Henderson Watercutty bringing you Ben Fred Fridays, and they are available 24/7. Number to call, write it down, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Should be a fun football weekend in terms of Mizzou at Georgia. We all thought maybe Mizzou would be undefeated going into this game. Instead, they're off the rails. And then you've got LSU and Alabama in a battle of the Titans. Let's start with Mizzou. How about your thoughts after a week off? Kind of regroup, settle things down, and go into playing between the hedges in Georgia.
Yeah, a week off to get your heads right and, try to figure out what kind of football team is going to make that trip down to Athens. Is it going to be the team that beat South Carolina, the only team that has beaten Georgia? Or is it going to be the team that has looked like a shell of itself against Vanderbilt and Kentucky? And it's hard to view this game, Dan, and not think about the other game that's going on this weekend. You mentioned it, LSU and Alabama, because imagine if Missouri would have handled its business and, played up to its potential every week, they could have been, and I got mocked for writing it before the season started, rightfully so, based on the Tigers having three losses now, so I got to wear that one. But they could have very well been 8-0 headed into this game, and you would have had Missouri versus Georgia and LSU versus Alabama. Missouri would be in the national spotlight, and it would be a national story because they would still not know whether or not they were eligible for the postseason. And if you wanted to find a way to lean on the NCAA and to bring, the national spotlight to the attention that this NCAA case should get, because it was an overreach by the body that punished Mizzou for a program that cooperated, it would have been the perfect storm for Mizzou. And unfortunately, they just couldn't take advantage of what the most desirable schedule in the SEC. They haven't been able to play up to their potential. So, I don't know anymore what to expect out of this team. They haven't played well when they are double-digit favorites, so maybe they play well when they're a double-digit dog. That's about all you can say. The one thing is Kelly Bryant's health, Dan. If he's not right, and it sounds like he's going to be the old game-time decision, if he's not right, then they won't win. If he's in there, maybe he can make some magic, but it won't matter who's playing quarterback. You or I could be, or it could be, Tom Brady. If they don't protect him and if they can't run the football against this Georgia team that gives up 10 points a game against FBS opponents, it won't matter. They've got to be able to sustain drives. They've got to be able to move the chains. If they can't do that against this Georgia football team, they won't win. And then the defense, it's pretty simple. You've got to, if I'm the coach, I'm making Georgia beat me in the air. They're so good at running the ball. They've got such talented running backs and such a powerful offensive line. I'm stacking the box and I'm making Jake Fromm throw it over my head. He has only attempted 50 passes once this season. It was in the double overtime loss against South Carolina. He threw three picks. He's only been sacked four times. He was sacked three times in that game. That's how you beat these guys. That's how you have to take your chance. You stack the box, you stop the run, and you make him beat you with his arm. If he can do that, you tip your cap and say that's a really good football team, but I'm not getting beat on the ground by these guys.
If they get blown out, I'm going to throw a couple of scenarios at you. If they get blown out and embarrassed, is he on the hot seat? Talking about the head coach, Barry Odom. There's sometimes you lose games at that level and you go, that's not great, but you can live with it. And then there's other times you say, this program is not going in the right direction and we got to look hard at what's going on. Or do you let it play out? And I'm not saying fire him after the game. I'm not saying fire him, period. I'm just throwing out a scenario. But you have a couple of winnable games. You got Arkansas, you got Tennessee. But as I look at it, too, after this, they might be losing games, too, because they could continue to go off the rails. So how important is it just to have a decent showing this weekend in Georgia?
It's very important. And I think Jim Sterk is looking for signs of fight. signs of this team playing with pride. Missouri fans, you know, the fan base, I don't think that they expect in their hearts of hearts their football team to go down to Georgia and win a football game, but they expect their team to show up, and they expect it to play with pride and not embarrass itself. And that's really where there's a bitter stew brewing amongst this fan base, and it's, I don't blame them, Dan, because for the past 2 weeks, they have watched a football team with their logo on it go out there and make really dumb penalties. And not just dumb penalties, but ugly ones. I'm talking late hits, pushing guys into tables after out of bounds, bad targeting penalties, things that a football coach should tell his guys, hey, this isn't us. And they've fallen into that trap lately. They've just looked, unprepared. They've looked, you know, at times like they didn't show up. And then when they try to turn it on, it's not there. So they have not had a good look to them for 2 weeks now. And that is something that when that happens, you start to go, okay, this is something to talk about. I mean, a team has a character, a team has a standard, and this team has not had a good one the past 2 weeks. And I think that's completely fair. So how does that change against what will be a primetime game with a nationally broadcast game with everybody's eyes on it? That's something that I think does matter. And then you look at, you know, another opportunity there against Florida, a team that Barry Odom has had his biggest win ever as the coach of the Missouri football team against. So another chance to reach up and punch above your weight class there. So I think it is absolutely fair to say, hey, there are going to be a lot of eyes on this game and a lot of, you know, not a lot of decisions being made off of this game, but certainly a chance to cleanse the palate from some pretty ugly games, some pretty questionable efforts the past two times out before that bye week. So I'm interested to see what kind of attitude in a good way shows up after a chance to kind of clear the mind after a bye week. And I don't mean attitude after the whistle and out of bounds. I mean attitude between the whistles and you know, an attempt to put, you know, the Missouri brand on a football game. Because if the brand is what you saw against Kentucky and Vanderbilt, then I do think it's fair to talk about which direction this thing is headed, because it wasn't pretty.
LSU, Alabama, the game of the year, at least for the time being. Who do you like?
Well, I think it's going to be close, and I think LSU is going to cover, but I think Alabama will. I think Alabama is going to win this game, and I would love for LSU to win it. I think Ed Orgeron's a heck of a coach, and I love his story, man. I mean, he was a national punchline, and then now no one's making jokes about him. He's got his guys playing hard. He's revolutionized that offense, brought it out of the Stone Age, and you know they might have a chance because it sounds like. It sounds like there's some questions about the quarterback situation injury-wise at Alabama, but LSU's got some injuries it's dealing with too. It's got a questionable defender, and it also is missing its best linebacker. He left the team. So it's not exactly, you know, it could be two teams at not full strength, but it's just so hard to beat Alabama there. It's ridiculously hard. So I think it'll be a close game, probably a high-scoring game the way these two offenses have played, but I think Alabama will pull it out.
I am proud to add to the website, as an exclusive sponsor of Ben Fred Fridays, the St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. As many of you know, I'm proud to be from St. Louis, and Mick Henderson and Steve Watercutty are from St. Louis. They call it home. Their firm is the premier criminal defense firm in Missouri and Illinois. So being from St. Louis, they want to help people from our region. And all you have to do is go to their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. That's stlcriminaldefense.com. Now, on that website, you will see the countless testimonials of people who they have helped over the many years that they have been doing work for people in the region. On the site, there are frequently asked questions, categories, and a wealth of information to help guide you through the process of figuring out how to make decisions to protect your rights. And it doesn't matter how big or small the case. They're known for their communication with their clients, and this is why. You can reach them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. and they have a proven track record of handling your criminal defense and traffic needs. The St. Louis-based criminal defense firm of Henderson Watercutty. The website again, and really, go to the website. It's incredibly easy to navigate. STLCriminalDefense.com. Check it out. That's STLCriminalDefense.com. Or call them anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. The number, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Let's talk a little bit about the local college basketball scene. SLU with a win over Florida Gulf Coast University a few nights ago at Chaffetz Arena. Good crowd, by the way. Student section was packed, and they shot the basketball well. Mizzou had an easy, easy time of Incarnate Word, and I'm not talking about Dan Rolfes and his outstanding team and winning state championships.
They might have put up a better fight, Dan.
They might have. You never know. But let's talk a little bit about SLU. I thought it was a good game. I mean, you think about their just ridiculous run of four wins in 4 days and getting to the NCAA tournament and doing it with limited players. There wasn't depth. One of the things I saw the other night was depth. I saw shooting. I saw that Hassan French is legit. Jordan Goodwin is Jordan Goodwin. And it's hard not to love that kid from St. Mary's, man. He's going to be a star before it's all said and done. So I came away, even though it's Florida Gulf Coast, it's the first game of the year, I came away very positive about what I saw with the Billikens.
Yeah, we're going to be careful on both of these games we talked about because both of these opponents were not good at college basketball. Florida Gulf Coast has a better name because of what Andy Insult did there, but they've not been very good since. But what I saw was Uri Collins was going to be really fun to watch, and I think there will probably be a lot of schools wishing they would have signed him and could have won him or would have been on him sooner out of St. Louis. I think that was a really good pickup by Travis. I just like watching guards who like to pass in college because I think that's where the college game gets bogged down, is when the ball doesn't move and when there's not that facilitator out there looking to make his teammates better. And I think that's something we'll talk about with both teams here. But the thing that jumped out to me, we knew Hassan French was a stud, and we knew Jordan Goodwin could be a great all-around player. What I saw from this Billikens team is they can shoot, man. And I was amazed at how far they got last year and how many games they won without being able to shoot from three. They're one of the worst. I actually looked this up. I thought it was right, but I double-checked this. They were the worst three-point shooting team that made the NCAA tournament last year. The absolute worst. And that's really hard to do. I mean, if you can't hit the three now, it's hard to win games. And that's something that Travis, he was frustrated by it, but he just kept preaching, let's defend our tails off and let's win rock fights. But he was also recruiting at this time, Dan, and he was going out and getting guys that could fill it up from deep. This Gibson Jimerson kid, I told Frank Cusimano he's the best shooter in St. Louis since Frank at UMSL. But in all seriousness, he can shoot, and he's probably the best pure shooter that Travis has had since he's been a college coach. You saw him get a little taste of it. Collins can shoot it as well. If they have guys that can be a threat from deep, they will be a team that's hard to beat because it's such a new wrinkle for them, and they're going to continue to defend. And they're going to continue to, you know, do what they do best. But if they can just add the threat of a three, it's going to open things up a lot for them.
Let's wrap it up with a little hockey here. And Robbie Fabbri, 2 days ago, traded to Detroit. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it was had reached a point where it was kind of unsustainable. Nothing against Robbie Fabbri, but he just never really hit it off with Craig Berube. He can never impress him enough to be a regular. And then I think, you know, the word comes out that he had requested a trade, and you have to believe Craig Berube knew that. And it, pretty clear, probably once you request a trade on a Craig Berube coach team, that you're not exactly going to get ample playing time or an opportunity to carve out a role. He was a tenacious player. You have to like what he can do when he's healthy. The knee injuries set him back. And also, I don't know that he was ever going to play, you know, a sustained physical enough game for Craig Berube's liking. He likes the guys who will go in there and throw a body around a little bit more. So Robbie was frustrated. Clearly his comments made to Jim Thomas indicated that he was felt like he was playing his best hockey right before he started to become a healthy scratch again and again. And I think Doug Armstrong saw a situation where things could have gotten kind of sour there, and he made a move that helps him. I mean, they bring in this guy from Detroit, and I'm blanking on his name right now, and I apologize for that. But he's able to kind of, I think, fill that gap a little bit that is going to be opened up by Alexander Steen's injury. He's not a superstar player, but he's big and physical, and that's the kind of guy. The Blues have had a lot of them who have kind of thrived in this role. So I think it was a smart trade because it took an asset that wasn't being used and had the potential to be kind of a sore spot and turn it into something that may be able to have some production for the Blues.
Boy, the Blues are playing well. It's fun to watch. I mean, they had become, like, at the end of last year, at least for me, and it's early November, but it's must-see TV. It was back to, for me, watching Pronger, McInnes, Dimitra, Tkachuk, Turgeon, Hull. It's fun to watch the Blues again, and that's where they're back at. Now, whether or not that is going to parlay, you know, success in postseason, time will tell. But, man, it's fun to watch, isn't it?
Well, I think that it's cool to see how they've responded to this Vladimir Tarasenko injury. And now, unfortunately for them, they've been dealt a double dose here with Steen out with this high ankle sprain. It's really hard to get through one injury and even harder to get through two. They've got two pretty big ones now. Now, Steen will be back, obviously, before Tarasenko is. But they've got character, man. They've got gumption, and that hasn't changed. And they've got some guys who are, if there was any kind of, you know, fun and happy hangover from that Stanley Cup run, it faded pretty quick when number 91 went down, and it kind of seemed like that was almost like a smelling dose of smelling salts to them to some degree. And it's really interesting too. You know, they've got this streak going of overtime wins, which probably isn't sustainable, but I do think it tells you a little bit about something about them. I mean, they get better when things get tighter, and that was certainly the case last year. And the other thing, too, is with Tarasenko out, who's so good on the power play, that they almost seem to be moving it better without him out there. The puck is moving, and I think that's something that has been fascinating to watch. So, look, you know, when Tarasenko went down, there were some who rushed to say, oh, you know, it's going to be so hard for them to do. Look, if we've learned anything about these guys, it's that you don't write them off. You just say, okay, you know, they've got another injury, and they're going to have to, it's going to be that much harder for them. Let's see how they respond, because more times than not, they find a way to continue to play really good hockey, and they seem to be on a stretch now where they're kind of starting to get some of that momentum that really carried them a long way last year.
If you always want to write us, you can do that. Ben's at the Post-Dispatch, but if you have a question specifically for this podcast, dan@scoopswithdannymac.com, and you can ask about any of the podcasts or information that are listed on the website. Also, if you go to the website, we do have, if you register, free giveaways of hats and T-shirts and golf shirts and various things just in time for the Christmas season. And I got to admit, Ben, I don't think I've ever seen you wear that hat or golf shirt. And I also have to admit, I don't think I've ever given you one.
Yeah, I was going to ask about this. Now, I know your daughter gets them because she's the sponsored golfer, but
that's correct.
Because I'm not an athlete, I get no swag, huh?
No, you don't. And I think you need to improve your Friday visits, and maybe we'll talk about it.
I got to remember the name of the guy the Blues traded for before I can get a hat.
Yeah, that's a check mark in the no box.
Rose, I think, or something like that. It's spelling of it. It gets me all tripped up. I'll get that nailed by next time. Hey, quickly, I know we're going to wrap this thing up, but we kind of teased talking about Mizzou hoops, and I wanted to, because I mentioned something about Yuri Collins. Just want to say real quick, you know, we didn't learn anything about these guys because, you know, Incarnate Word was stinking. But I'll just say this. It was the first time in God knows how many games where two Mizzou players had five or more assists in a game. And both of them were guys that I think have a chance to be kind of important facilitators for this team. It's a guard-heavy team. They're going to move the ball so much better. And the guy that you've got to know about is Drew Smith. He's the Evansville transfer. He's finally eligible. He's the guy that they tried to get eligible last season. The Evansville threw a little hissy fit, and blocked it. Well, now he's finally eligible, and he sees the court, Dan, and has such a calm heartbeat. You know, he's a steady guy who only wants to help his teammates score. They're going to have to force him to score himself, but he can, and what he really wants to do is pass. The other guy is Xavier Pinson, who was kind of erratic last year. He was the guy who was throwing passes sometimes, and the Golden Girls were ducking because the ball was flying everywhere. He's settled in a little bit. He's gained some weight. He's gained some poise. I think they can bring him off the bench, and he can kind of be that secondary kind of run-and-gun guy. And if they can move the ball better, that means they can get the ball down to Jeremiah Tillman better if he's in there. So far, so good with foul trouble with him in game one. We'll see how that progresses. But and they'll also be able to play small and overcome things when he's not in the game. If he does have those games where he gets in foul trouble, the guard play for them is the key. And they've got a really good one in Drew Smith and a really intriguing one in the young Xavier Pinson.
Good stuff as always, Ben. And we'll catch you up next Friday. Thank you so much.
Sounds good, buddy. Talk soon.